Well, as I mentioned, a pair of German physicists claim to have broken the speed of light, an achievement that would undermine our entire understanding of space and time. And as Israeli physicist, he believes that we can go back into time eventually. That's dramatic all by itself. In a moment, futurist and research scientist John J. Harper joins us as we talk about this breaking technology on Coast to Coast AM. Well, futurist and research scientist and retired electronics engineer John J. Harper with us tonight. He is, as I mentioned, also a writer, public speaker, editor-in-chief of Reality Press in California. His focus is on understanding the earth changes that we see manifesting right under our eyes now, impacting client consciousness, civilization in Solar Cycle 24 so that he can help us find creative solutions to them. He's our special guest tonight on Coast to Coast. Hey, John, welcome back. How are you?
Fine, sir. Great to be with you, George, and your wonderful audience.
You know, so many things are breaking in science of light. You know, we talk about the German physicist that claimed to have broken the speed of light. We'll talk with you about that in a second, John, and also an Israeli physicist who believes that eventually we can go back into time, and he's working on that. Why does it seem that science, or is it just my imagination or perception, seems recently to be hitting these home runs with things that have taken centuries to understand?
Well, you know, it's really difficult now to go into the physics of light without touching into the metaphysics of light. And of course, Coast to Coast AM listeners know that all the different folks that have been on your show over the last many years who have tried to converge science and spirit. But you know, it really boils down to whether or not you understand the metaphysics and the physics of light. What I mean by that in particular is that space and time is relative to the speed of light, or so we thought. And now, if that is not true, then this opens Pandora's box, both to new technology, and we must realize that as we see new technology emerge outside of us, it also changes the consciousness that we approach our life experience. So this is extremely important to understand that if we no longer are frozen in time, this is going to really liquefy, if you will, our experience of reality. In other words, we're really going to see the inner experience. We're going to have more experiences that touch the inner essence of everything.
What does this do to Einstein and Einstein's theories, John?
It means that Albert Einstein was an extremely brilliant person who began his career with a thought picture that had him riding a beam of light. And he tried, throughout his middle years to reconcile that metaphysical experience of riding a beam of light through the cosmos and how that would be perceived on the Earth, and how he could see in his imagination what was taking place physically in the observable world around him. Of course, later in life, Einstein said that imagination was much greater a force than anything else in reality.
And he did all this without a computer, John. Can you imagine if he happened to have been computer literate and had what we have today at his disposal, what he'd be able to come up with?
It would be phenomenal, and certainly he would be one that would, because of his flexibility, would change his theories as events dictated in the laboratory to him. We need to realize that we've created a false sense of time and space because we have allowed ourselves to go to the mathematical endpoint. And in other words, we thought we knew from our observations in the laboratory what we were perceiving was to be a fixed event. And of course, then quantum physics came in, and Einstein himself said he didn't really like this spooky, stuff at a distance, this action at a distance, meaning that he did not accept that anything could go faster than the speed of light and that we could always observe it and therefore measure it, quantify it, and work with it. But now things are becoming liquid. Light is becoming a liquid-like flow substance. And, of course, this takes us back to the ancients when we talk about the theory of the ether.
Well, and you basically have tapped into this in your latest work, Transformers, Shamans of the 21st Century. Would you consider Einstein one of those kinds of 21st century shamans?
Absolutely. And, you know, this is interesting because now this is becoming out of the anthropological and psychological realm of studying shamanism. Everywhere I go today, when I, say, pick up a good textbook that has to do with creativity, and I'm thinking right now of Otto Scharmer's work at MIT Sloan School of Management. He has a thing called a book called Presence and also a book called Theory U. And what he says in that, and his colleagues, is that we must get back to the indigenous way of looking at reality, including problems that are facing us in the corporate world and the technological community. This is a tremendous breakthrough in consciousness. And again, it has to do with this idea of light and mind, and barriers can be breached now that simply were not available to us. We literally could not solve the problems because our consciousness was not at the point where it could look back and see where we had been and where we're going. So as I say, we're not only going from 2020 hindsight, which has pretty much been perfect, now we're going to 2020 foresight.
Do we all have this ability to look into the future with our minds?
We do, and one of the breakthroughs that I have had recently, George, is that I started looking at all the ancient theories about light. You know, in the Bible, it begins, of course, and God created the light.
Yes.
Out of chaos, okay, out of chaos. And literally chaos theory comes into this, and fractal geometry. And when you start to get into holograms, again, these are light or optic phenomena in physics. But the metaphysics is what's really going to rock our world. Because when we understand that when we change a particle or a waveform of energy, by observing it, I mean truly believe this, then this is going to change the way we feel fixed in space and time now. And if we no longer are fixed, then this is going to lead to a phenomenal breakthrough in the way we become creative and co-creators of our own reality.
And bring this home for us, John, because someone somewhere is saying to themselves right now, okay, if a couple German physicists say they've broken the speed of light, so what? If an Israeli scientist says that we can go back into time, so what? How does this affect all of us?
It has to do with our perception of who we are. And we are light beings, and I mean this in the purest sense. If we look at the work of someone like mathematical physicist Stan Tenen, who I know has been a guest.
Yes, just was a few weeks ago. Yeah.
Marvelous. I did not know that, in fact. But yeah. Stan Tenen is someone who made a deep impression on me many, many years ago because of his humility and his ability to keenly observe and go where the data led him instead of trying to force, you know, his belief system onto the observation. And the point is here that Stan Tenen came up with a model of reality that is the torus, right, the apple or bagel or donut shape. And how this ties together now is we know pretty much that in the center of that donut, that this torus, that is the, you might say, the black hole in our Milky Way galaxy. We can just use, you know, cut a slice of the cosmos,
right,
and just say the Milky Way. What this means is that all information, light, time, everything that exists in our reality has been processed through that black hole and then whips around through that black hole and is returned to us through the sun and through the center of the earth. So there's always this idea of falling into time and space. The classic example is Alice in Wonderland. Another example is The Wizard of Oz. These are really teaching metaphors that we need to pay attention to because they're talking about a multi-dimensional reality that we can access, and we do it through trance. And trance is simply this, the unification of the inside of us and the outside of us with the left and right brain hemispheres synchronized.
But science doesn't understand this yet, John. They don't get into what you've written about.
You know what? There are some, and they're multiplying like rabbits, if you'll pardon the expression, and falling down Alice's rabbit hole by the truckload. Dr. Claude Swanson, who wrote this marvelous book called Synchronized Universe, you know, he talked about meditation and trance being the phase shift, the transition through DNA and into this multidimensional or fifth dimensional realm. The fifth dimension is the center point of this torus. That's the center of us. If Jesus said the kingdom of heaven is within us, that's what I'm talking about. There's a fifth dimension beyond space and time, and it sounds like Rod Serling talking about the Twilight Zone, but it is. This is exactly what I'm referring to, is that there is a way to fall down this rabbit hole and tap this center of information and bring it back and be very creative with it.
Now, you say that a lot of scientists then are beginning to jump on this bandwagon, yet we really don't hear a lot about this. I mean, so we have a program like this, or you write a very special book like Transformers, but by and large, the public's not going to find out about this, John.
That's right. It's being taught in seminars. It's being taught in corporate think tanks, but as kind of a thought experiment, as Albert Einstein would say. In other words, even the corporate folks will not take this as serious as you and I might be this evening, George. They're going to use it as a playful idea, a way to get folks talking creatively, imaginatively about solving a problem. But the point is that when we see the technology rapidly accelerate and break down these barriers, like the space-time barrier, we need to realize that there's a lot of things churning on inside of those folks, and then accordingly in us, by resonance in us. We're all connected through the zero-point field. You know, Lynn McTaggart's book, The Field, right? And Intentions. This is what we're talking about, that we are all connected to one another through this fifth dimensional center hole, this torus, and this is exciting. I mean, you know, you can feel the passion that I have, but I know there's folks out there listening to us that are just as passionate about this idea that all the barriers are being breached, you know, the time barrier, just like the sound barrier, now the light barrier. Okay, this is very revolutionary, and this is going to lead to marvelous new technology, and we need to realize that we are the technology that we have been looking for.
And it's always been with us. That's
always
the funny
been
thing.
With us.
My late aunt, Dr. Shafika Caregula, moved her entire study and practice into looking at telepathy and supernatural events, and she believed that every human being had the ability to become telepathic. It was something that we are born with, needed to be developed, of course, but she believed that it was an incredible way for people to change their lives.
It is, and I've experienced this for myself. Back in 1990, when I was doing research after I had seen my deceased colleague, who was a physicist and an optics physicist, George Begay, when I spoke briefly about this on your show before. But the point tonight is that I had a telepathic experience, spontaneous, in September of 1990. I was reflecting on all the things that had happened to me during the research of life after death, near-death experience, mysticism. Again, topics as a scientist I had never even thought of investigating at that time until I saw my dead friend come back in a lucid dream state, which is a trance state, one morning. But when I had this telepathic encounter in 1990, I knew that this is where we were going. I knew that telepathy was an innate skill that was going to manifest soon, and I believe this, for example, is what 2012 is about too.
We'll get into that, John. Very important. When you had that lucid dream, how did you know it was that and not simply, you know, a rough night and you went to sleep and you had this strange dream?
One of the things was the feeling that it conveyed. When it happened at 4 a.m. in a June late spring morning, my friend had been dead for about 6 months, and I went through this grief cycle, but at the time, for several weeks, I did not have any thoughts about him. That was important to me because it was like I'd cleared the registers and I was kind of getting away from the grief cycle. And then he spontaneously came to me at 4 a.m. and it was the liquid mercury body, this shine that he had on him, also the symbols he showed me, and maybe we want to talk about that this evening. But one of the things that I realized was that our physical body is a liquid crystal. And this is really important to understand, George. I mean, if we can understand that everything is a liquid crystal, that is a plasma, fourth state of matter, this opens up the idea of immortality. This opens up the idea that we are light beings. And, you know, I saw on your website earlier in the day this article about pouring glass on Fort Lauderdale beaches.
Right.
And that literally made me light up because the zero-point energy is a crystal lattice. In other words, it's crushed glass. And my wife, Connie, and I were at dinner the other night, and she said, John, I understand you're going to be with George Nuri. And I said, yes. And she said, well, how in the world are you going to explain some of this metaphysical mumbo-jumbo that you talk about with me? And remember now, George, my wife is a Missourian, so it's a show-me.
Show-me state. You got it.
And so I said, Connie, you know what? It's because it's all ground glass. I mean, the platonic solids from sacred geometry, the pyramids, the everything about space and time has to do with the fact that zero-point energy, the vacuum of space, is not empty. It's a plenum. It's full of a crystal lattice liquid plasma. And this, I mean, this is good science here now, guys. I'm not talking about metaphysics, but this is physics. It's a crystal lattice network. And that means that if you crush glass, if you crush any stone under enough pressure, you're going to get a piezoelectric effect. That's what crystal radios are all about in the early years, right? So if you've got, if you were sitting embedded in an energy form that's spiraling around in a Milky Way galaxy, for example, and it's got suns and planets whipping through this space, then this means there's tremendous energy, infinite energy, actually, we calculate, in every drop of space. Every point of space has the potential to run a vortex, a tornado. Again, this spiral of Alice in Wonderland or the Wizard of Oz through the tornado. And so this is very important. That means that we're made of this liquid crystal glass. This means that, you know, if we take the axiom, as above, so below, as within, so without, we can see that we are, again, the technology we're looking for. We are these tremendous light beings that are now lighting up from the inside out.
So it doesn't surprise you to have these German physicists simply say that we claim to have broken the speed of light. It doesn't surprise you when an Israeli physicist says that he thinks we can go back into time. You accept that.
I accept it because I know the science now is going to be confronted with a new reality, a new fifth dimensional reality where time really doesn't exist except in these ways that spiral through galaxies. And in other words, it's artificial. Time is like a slinky. I have on my blog tonight a little thing from Leah Haley. It's a quote from Mark Davenport's book, Visitors from Time, where she was aboard a UFO, and a voice said to her, you know, time is no more solid than the Earth is flat. And then it went on and on to talk about a slinky toy, I mean, which she metaphorically uses as what she understood time to be. It could be twisted and bent, spiral around, etc. So when we say go back in time or go into the future, these are very, very lucid, liquid-like concepts now. I mean, we've lost the ground, the solid ground that we used to take our frame of reference from at every level.
What did you mean by symbols that you were shown?
Well, this is interesting. I briefly mentioned this to you on an earlier show, that I saw my friend George Begay, who again was an optics physicist, a very bright man, and he died at age 40 of a heart attack suddenly. Oh. And when I saw him 6 months after this, quote, death event, he came back to me in a very playful way. And as I relay to you, that I saw him with a beachcomber hat on, in a Hawaiian luau shirt, and again, it was so preposterous that I think I even smiled, you know, at that moment. But he made contact with me telepathically. I mean, it was mind-to-mind communication.
Let's pick that up, John, when we come right back. I want to get into that because these symbols apparently are very, very important. I'm George Norrie with futurist John J. Harper right here on Coast to Coast AM. Special thanks to all of you who continue to support the After Dark newsletter, but more importantly, a portion of these After Dark sales go to Al Bielek of the Philadelphia Experiment, who is on some financial hard times, and it's a pretty good revenue source for him. And also, you'll get a free CD of an old Art Bell interview with Al Bielek about the Philadelphia Experiment when you subscribe or renew your After Dark newsletter. So you can call 1-888-727-5505. That's 1-888-727-5505. You can also go online, coasttocoastam.com, and help out Mr. Al Bielek. Well, welcome back. We're with futurist John J. Harper. Now we can get into the symbols. John, without any interruption for you, go ahead.
Well, let's start out and let's see how far we can get into this, because this really does open up a whole new way of looking at reality. My friend George came to me that morning, and in this beachcomber hat, he had flattened metal beer cans. Now, at the time, this was a joke to me. I thought my mind was playing tricks on me, of course. I thought that this was some type of almost an hallucination, but it deepened, and then the telepathy started, and the mind-to-mind communication came. The message that I got immediately was, hey, buddy, I'm fine. Relax about this. That was the impression. It wasn't those words, but it was that feeling. This information was given to me as a feeling and also as a symbolic visual image. These metal beer cans, by the way, George and I were avid beer drinkers. We were in the U.S. Army together. We went to Germany, Bavaria together. So it was kind of an appropriate symbol. However, there were four metal beer cans. They were all different types of metal. I could see that, you know, they glistened differently in the light. They looked, some were, you know, flat, some were shiny, etc. Now, here's what I finally realized that meant. Only when I really looked into the work of folks like Walter Cruttenden and the Binary Research Institute, for example, when I realized the four ages, the four major ages of this planet are represented by metals, by iron, by bronze, by silver, and by gold, I realized that I was being given some type of information that had to do with the zodiac, it had to do with the coming Earth changes. I mean, all these things did not crystallize, so to speak, in my mind at that time. But as I unwound these little breadcrumbs that were dropped that particular morning, it just deepened. It's like near-death experiencers who come back, like my friend Mellon Thomas Benedict, who said, you know, he didn't have all this information immediately available to him, but over weeks, months, and probably years, the dots started to be connected, and then it just flows like fine wine, so to speak. I agree with that. That's exactly what happened to me. It was a very shocking experience. It was a very overwhelming emotional experience, but it had this information content to it. And so there's kind of the background. Now, this is interesting. If the four ages are metallic, and I just mentioned earlier that the zero-point energy is this liquid crystal plasma that has a metallic structure to it. And, and then we go to folks like Dr. Carl Jung, the great psychologist, who said that spirit or consciousness or space is more or equal to a metal than it is anything else. And when I came across that bit of wisdom from Dr. Jung, that really floored me. I just had never thought about the alchemical idea of metals being, you know, coming from space and then being cooked in the furnace of the sun. Of course, being a scientist, I started making these links, you know, but I said, well, this has got to be coincidence. This is just, I mean, these were primitives. They had no idea what they were talking about. I was very, very wrong about that, George.
They were way ahead of us even to this day, John.
And not only that, George, here's what I realized. That we, according to Michael Cremo, for example, who wrote a couple of wonderful books, Forbidden Archaeology and Human Devolution.
Yep, I was just with him this weekend, first time
wonderful.
I met him.
These synchronicities are flowing like a
fool. Really? I mean, he's been on the program for years, but I never met him before. Well, I finally did this weekend.
That's wonderful. And, you know, there is a brilliant individual, bar none. And what I learned from Michael Cremo by looking at his research was that he says, you know, we devolve from pure consciousness or spirit. Now, remember, we're talking, Carl Jung talks about this being a metallic substance. We talk, in fact, it's a liquid mercury. When I saw my friend George's body that morning, it was a crystal water, crystalline mercury-like look. It had a metallic look to it. I didn't understand that. I said, you know, I've heard of people coming, angels and light beings, and I've heard of those kind of things, but I never, ever would have thought in a million years that that my friend would have this metallic-like body. Well, anyway, it's very interesting that these four ages are metallic, and we're talking about going now, in fact, into the Silver Age, and you think about the silver light of the silvery moon tonight, for example. But these metaphors keep building like this, and these symbols keep unraveling for folks who really ponder them. And I feel very strongly now that this is where we're going. We're going to a telepathic society, and that this idea of trance being kind of the key that unlocks the door to the fifth dimension, to me, you know, is just a fact. You know, I can't say it any more humbler than that, because if you look at the trance phenomenon, whether it's levitation or clairvoyance or telepathy or self-healing, I've talked to folks who went into a trance and had a spontaneous remission from cancer and so on and so forth. When you look at the literature and you collect it, as I did for about 15 years before I wrote really the book that is published now as Transformers, Shamans of the 21st Century, you just come to this realization, it really impacts you that what our society has done is caused us to not be able to go into this unified mind state that the shamans call trance, or we call trance, and they just call reality. And, you know, Holger Kallweit, who's a German anthropologist, psychologist, he wrote a book called Shamans, Healers, and Medicine Men. And he said, trance is the true perception of mankind. And when I saw that, I said, what in the world is this, you know, good doctor talking about? Well, I come to realize again that I was wrong in my assumptions, because they were based on this space-time relativistic mm-hmm. science.
I was just talking with my friend Bill Burns this weekend, and he had met a lot of people at this expo that we were at, this UFO expo this weekend, and people who are trying and practicing meditation now and telepathy have all told him the same thing. This is a common denominator. I want to get your reaction to this, John. They all say that they are happier than they've ever been in their lives since they've been in this condition, this situation. It seems to be something very common with people that when they begin to become more telepathic, more intuitive, more in tune, they shed this unhappiness that they've had in their lives, and they've got a different outlook, a different perspective.
This is a very profound conversation that you and I are having. This is exactly my experience. This is why you hear the passion in my voice. If I could get folks to understand that there's nothing to fear but fear itself, a classic Roosevelt statement, but when we hear folks talking about being afraid of the paranormal, this is not, in my opinion, the way to go. Now, that does not mean there's a lot of things going on out here. There are indeed parasites in the cosmos. There are indeed a lot of things going on, but we need discernment. We don't need fear. How do you get discernment? How do you test the spirit, so to speak? You do it by getting in the same state of consciousness which you encounter them. Now, this should not be done overnight. This should not be done by folks who are under psychiatric care or medicated for example, manic depression. However, you need to get the information into your mind. That's why, for example, I wrote the book. Was kind of a, you know, a lot of folks don't read anymore. I don't know if we all know that, but, you know, Amazon said there's just a tremendous problem in selling a lot of different types of books. I mean, we go after Harry Potter, and that's wonderful. I've got 8 grandchildren that would override anything that I ever write or speak about and go to Harry Potter. But what it's really saying is the power of the imagination now is manifesting. It's also saying, though, that a lot of us are not getting the information we need because we're not reading. And let me tell you something, that when you do this research, it changes your brain. It changes your blood chemistry. It changes your DNA. It's a liquid crystal. So when you run information through you, and while we have these wonderful coast-to-coast AM meetings, get-togethers here every evening, is because the information is actually changing our DNA.
Well, there's no question about this. This liquid crystal that you talk about, very normal, very common part of the universe or the multiverse?
Yes. In fact, in the center of these toruses, this black hole, as we call them, you know, we've got these molten metal cauldrons, as I call them now. The center of the Earth is a diamond, actually. We've done, you know, scientists, geologists have done some sonar-type ground-penetrating radar kind of studies. And some theorists, and I believe they are correct, think that at the center of the Earth is a diamond. Now, it's interesting, when a sun burns out, that it goes into a diamond shape. Again, the zero-point energy, which is space, the space we're in right now is heated by the sun and the Earth, and it's expanding and you know, doing all these wonderful living organic things, breathing, if you will, going in and out. But what we're really doing is we're breathing DNA. I mean, the air is alive with DNA. You know, there's theories about space called panspermia theories, you know, that Dr. Crick and all those folks with the early DNA experiments, they feel that the Earth basically is an egg and that it was fertilized from DNA coming from a comet or whatever. But, you know, we need to look at these more carefully because I think they're true.
I'm having lunch with Tom this weekend at this expo, and a woman comes up to me and gives me this little green box. And she says, here, I just want you to have this as a gift. Thank you. You know, we just all appreciate everything that all of you are doing on the program. So I said, no, come on, this is not necessary. And she said, no, please, it's important to me. So she gives us this little box, John, and we went on, we had the lunch. I didn't open up the box until afterward. And I pulled out this incredible-looking solid crystal that must have had five or six different offshoots to it. It had that jagged look. Do you remember the original Superman movie? Not the old one, but the
with kryptonite?
The one with Christopher Reeves.
Yeah.
And he's in the North Pole, and he had those crystals or those glass things that he would put in. And, you know, he could look into the future or into the past through it. That's what these things looked like. Yeah. And I got to tell you, I spent, and I've never done this before, I spent an hour looking at this structure of this crystal. And I came away with just this incredible feeling of, and, you know, you talk about liquid, and this was a solid version. But, I mean, it was a weird, profound statement of looking into this crystal, and it had order to it, and it had structure. And it was just really strange looking at it. I don't know if I'm making any sense, but it was just strange to me.
You're making a lot of sense, and we need to realize that there are scientists right now looking at the idea that all rock and crystal formations carry information. You know, I know some of our folks out here will know about crystal skulls and all that type of thing.
Yeah.
And I've looked in that too, and it struck me hard that this is correct, that these skulls do have a tremendous storage capacity. Of course, we're looking at optical computer, you know, in solid state and other types of light phenomena actually carrying this information. But just think, if everything initially is a liquid crystal, that we come out of this center point, zero-point energy, and it, again, is a crystal lattice network, and it had to have all the seeds of information, all the archetypes, all the blueprints of everything that came from the center point outwards. In other words, you know, isn't it phenomenal that, you know, the ground holds all these seeds, and as we go through different seasons, and some crops die out and some come back, we call them weeds a lot of times, but I'm fascinated by weeds these days, you know? These are tough little critters, aren't they? And, you know, we walk around every day and we look at the natural world, and we don't realize that we're inside this tremendously living organism called the Earth. I think we're starting to realize that now. But how interesting it would be if we were all to look at it shamanically, where everything was alive, everything was speaking some type of language to one another. I've even heard of scientists today, in fact, I haven't looked into this, but they're talking about being able to have instruments that are so sensitive, this is based on optics, physics, on light phenomena, to gather the information from the antenna of insects and know what they're talking about.
That's incredible.
This is fantastic. And this is some of Walter Crutton's and stuff, by the way. This is not, you know, on my blog site, Binary Research Institute, they have some of this information there. So this is solid. This is, you know, this is real people with really good minds looking at it.
They're probably saying stay away from the raid.
Exactly. They're saying go green.
I want to spend some time next hour, John, talking with you about your perceptions of 2012. But you have done some mentioning of crop formations and crop circles. What is your take on that phenomenon?
If we just think a minute about this idea that the Earth itself is a liquid crystal structure at the center of it, and the electromagnetic fields run, you know, north, south, etc., but they go through the core of the Earth. What are the electromagnetic fields processing? They're processing sunlight through the magnetosphere and the ionosphere. They're coming down through the center of the Earth. They're gathering information. So what is going on, in my opinion, is, you know, like the skin, like we have a boil erupt on our skin. It kind of tells us the condition of our innards. This is what's going on with crop circles. These geometric forms are following platonic solid geometries. This is what the pyramids were all about, except Stonehenge and so on and so forth. What is it saying to us? It's saying that the Earth is coming alive again, that we're headed for the Silver Age, the age of the mind, on the way to the Golden Age again, and that these eternal returns of consciousness through us are now being manifest in the fields of grain.
Well, you say it's coming alive again. Wasn't it always alive? It's us who really might be coming alive again?
That's true, but think about the ice ages. The Earth goes to sleep, so to speak. It is frozen in time and space, so to speak, during ice ages that run about 100,000 years, give or take. We are now getting ready to go into a new ice age, and this is where creativity must come to bear. This is a call to creativity now by the planet. We do not want to go to sleep again. We are awakening again, and we humans are here to help the Earth restore itself to full consciousness.
Why is it, John, that so many people on this planet are not intuitive, are not very loving people? They're warmongers, they hate, they're greedy, they're thieves, they're murderers. What happened to them?
Reincarnation happens at different cycles for different people. It is up to us. We have free will. And when we do not follow the dictates of our heart, but if we block out all these feelings of compassion, of love, we do not get access to these fields of information that I'm referring to. The zero point energy is full of love. It's full of light. It's full of information. It is full of the mind of God. And as this information cycles through the sun, from the Milky Way core galaxy, through the Earth and the solar system, other planets are involved in this as well. What happens is that because folks reincarnate to process the neuroses out of them, so to speak, that they do not participate in these awakening periods. In fact, as we have terrorist cells, these are like cancer cells. These are runaway selfish genes, so to speak, and they are real and they are a problem. And this is a call to be very creative in dealing with them so that we don't have to go through the reincarnation cycle of generating more ill will.
I tell you what, John, you're making us think. There's no doubt about that. When we come back next hour, we're going to talk about 2012 and some other issues with John J. Harper. Last hour of the night, we'll open up the phone lines and give you an opportunity to chat with him as well. His book that we're talking about, Transformers with T-R-A-N-C-E, Shamans of the 21st Century.